America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, Truth in Broadcasting.
Welcome back. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Hey, Tom, hope you're doing well. Wing your way safely to Europe and back. I'm Laura Flanders. It is Connect the Dots Friday here on Air America Radio. It's also Open Lines Friday. Here's the number, 866-303-2270. That's 866-303-2270. We have great guests. Lots of time and one really, really scary idea. So, where do you want to start? I'm going to let you put the pieces together first, and then I'm going to lay out the facts as I see them, and they're frightening me. 866-303-2270. It is the Tom Hartman Show here, Friday on Air America Radio. All right, I'm going to lay out some dots, and I am going to give you first bash at piecing them together, okay? We've got a potential for a GOP train wreck in 08 and 2010, all right? You have the least popular president in history with nothing whatsoever to lose. You got a country who's fed up who are hardly even paying attention to what General Petraeus had to say this week because, heck, they'd known for weeks in advance what he was going to say. They knew he's less a general than a political operative. They know that because he's the guy who wrote a very misleading op-ed right before the election of last year, reassuring the people that everything in Iraq was just A-okay. The country's fed up. They want out of Iraq. I don't believe most people are paying that much attention to the details. And there is, meanwhile, a beating drum. If I had beating drum sound here, I would be playing it. There is a beating drum stirring talk about attacking Iran. So here's what I believe. I believe that what's happening in Iraq today is not an accident. We're talking about chaos. We're talking about civil war. We're talking about, well, the Bush administration's number one ally in the Anbar province, the province they were just, you know, so excited to praise this week, was assassinated yesterday morning not far from his home. I don't believe any of this is an accident. I believe there are dots you can connect. You have chaos. You have funding of warlord militias. You have talk about withdrawing some troops, and we'll get into the meat of the matter of that. You've got a GOP in trouble. I believe the president does have a plan to attack Iran. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Tom Hartman. The number is 866-303-2270. As I said, I will lay it out for you. But first, have a go yourself. Here are some dots. Let's start with, the Republican minority leader, John Boehner of Ohio. He was talking with CNN's Wolf Blitzer yesterday, and he basically came out saying that troop losses are a small price to pay for achieving American policy goals in the region. Here's Boehner.
In blood, the Americans who are killed every month, how much longer do you think this commitment, this military commitment, is going to require?
I think General Petraeus outlined it pretty clearly. We're making success, although we need to firm up those successes. We need to continue our effort here because, Wolf, long-term, the investment that we're making today will be a small price if we're able to stop al-Qaeda here, if we're able to stabilize the Middle East. It's not only going to be a small price for the near future, but think about the future for our kids and their kids.
All right, so what do you think? Do you think you should apologize, A? B, do you think this is a man whose party gets it, what sending men and women halfway around the world to fight a useless war that never should have started for no reason anyone can discern or will talk honestly about? Do you think this is a man who gets it, how this nation feels about his party? Is this a party leader capable of turning his team's fortunes around? What do you think? I would say a million times no. He's got about as much chance as, well, you tell me how much chance he has of turning fortunes around on this particular trajectory he seems to be on. And if you think you should apologize, that's the chorus coming from Democrats this week. I think that's the detail. Nonetheless, you call in and tell me. 866-303-2270. Okay, that's one piece. Background, GOP in trouble. Front ground. Foreground, they call it in real terms, nationally televised broadcast last night. I'd be interested, actually, how many of you all could bear to sit up and watch it, but that's another sideline question, perhaps. In a nationally televised broadcast last night, George W. Bush shared his vision for what he called a reduced presence in Iraq. But let's be clear, it was very much a vision, as in to say his actual vow of what he intends to do is to keep a large number of troops in Iraq well beyond his presidency. Now, he claimed he would withdraw a limited number of troops by July of next year. We'll talk about how limited. But immediately after his broadcast went to air, his officials were out there arrayed around the pundit tables, making it very clear that part of the so-called troop surge contingent, that's the escalation, could actually remain, and even more troops could go to Iraq in the next few months, which would mean a larger occupation by the time next summer comes around than before the escalation that began earlier this year. Here's George W. Bush on his plan for bringing down troops. This is from the televised discussion or announcement last night.
General Petraeus believes we have now reached the point where we can maintain our security gains with fewer American forces. He has recommended that we not replace about 2,200 Marines scheduled to leave Anbar province later this month. In addition, he says it will soon be possible to bring home an Army Combat Brigade for a total force reduction of 5,700 troops by Christmas. And he expects that by July, we will be able to reduce our troop levels in Iraq from 20 combat brigades to 15.
Now, 5,700 plus those brigades, that equals about 18,000. That's a reduction of less than anywhere close to the 30,000 the administration escalated last year. All right, so he's saying, all right, if you say 5,700 by Christmas, another 18,000 maybe by July, that's kind of like saying you are willing to give up 2 spoons of the 5 spoons of extra cream you put on your hot fudge sundae, and you're going to tell the world you're going on a diet. Right? Forgive me if my math is wrong on this. It was never my strong suit. But he throws brigades at us, and I had to find out from somebody how big a brigade is. Unlike the wonderful Randy Rhodes, I don't know those numbers off by heart. But I was told it equals about 18,000, what he's talking about. The 5,700 plus 18,000. You tell me, is that anywhere close to actually bringing us back to where we were this time last year? And let's remember, this time last year, before they got into this whole urge to surge scenario, we, the people, were demanding troop cuts then. Not a little bit less extra cream on our surge sundae. All right, when we come back, let's take a break. When we come back, there is related news from Anbar province, very serious. And I've got an idea about Iran. 866-303-2270. That's the number to call. That's 866-303-AAR0. No, it's not Tom you're hearing. It's me, Laura Flanders. Tom, big shout out to you. You're doing good work in Europe. He'll be back next week. Meanwhile, you're with me for the next 3 hours. We've got great guests. Stay tuned.
Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Tom Hartman. You're listening to Air America Radio. Our number, if you want to call in this open lines Friday, is 866-303-2270. I have pending in the wings my analysis of what's been happening this week and the reason. I'll give you the reason why, after much pondering, thinking, finger to the temple kind of fingernail, drum beating on the desk kind of thought. Sort of Tom Hartman kind of thought, actually. Deep, critical, based in history, analytical, articulated eloquently, that kind of thing. After much of that, I decided I think this country really is going to bomb Iran. I think there really is going to be some kind of a pretext discovered for, let's just say, aggression against Iran. Let's just say escalated tensions with Iran. I've been one of those on the fence. I've thought, how could this be? How is this possible? What sane general could possibly allow this to happen? Do we have enough troops? All of that stuff. I've been on the rational side of this. Even found myself at times thinking the men in the military will save us because they won't go along with that plan. But I think we've got a wounded dog, not a lame duck, but a wounded dog president who, and we know from this guy, every time he's under attack, all he does is strut more stubbornly. He's an old bully from way back. When he's under attack, what does he do? Strike out, lash out. He's got nothing to lose. We can all be very excited about how, well, he hasn't got that many more months in power, and it's exciting to talk about it only being 16 months that the administration is the executive branch. But let's be clear, they are the executive branch right now, which means they, well, they run the occupation, they approve or veto laws and budgets, they make all the political and judicial appointments, they issue federal regulations regarding protest or not protest, detentions or not detentions, they negotiate treaties, trade agreements, they can grow their surveillance and law enforcement agencies and practices and all the stuff we don't even know about. And did you see this week that Mike McConnell at Homeland Security had to admit that, in fact, the allegations they made, he made earlier this week, that some terror plot in Germany had been foiled thanks to the new reinvigorated FISA, the non-FISA, around FISA, wiretapping laws, those allegations that there was a link between those newly strengthened, which is to say weakened in the Civil Liberties Department laws, somehow played a role in foiling that German terror attack, and he was just plain old wrong? Mike McConnell, I was wrong. Tiny detail. Page A212. Maybe B212. A8. All right, A8, the New York Times, bottom left-hand corner, the part that nobody ever reads. All right, well, anyhow, whether you are excited about this being a 16-month left lame duck administration, I would say you got 16 months of a wounded dog strikeout executive that believes that it is the only power you need. You don't need any kind of balance of anything. This is an administration that believes in the unitary executive, in the signing statement, in the we're not going to obey any bits of the law we don't like theory of balance of powers. I would say we're looking at the most dangerous president in our lifetimes. And we know what he's bad at. He's bad at anything having to do with real security, human community, schools, homes, social safety nets, environmental protection, sustainable development, health care. Bad at all that. Doesn't give a damn about all that. What he's good at, distracting the nation, driving up war profits and oil profits for his party's corporate friends. And what has he always wanted? What has he always wanted from day one? And what might save the GOP in a time of utter disaster? I say war with Iran. It's not that, though, that I'm basing my analysis on. It's something else. And something a little scarier that we're going to talk about on today's program. We're going to lay it out for you step by step by step by step. First up in this hour, a little bit later, we're going to hear from Phyllis Bennis, fellow of the Institute for Policy Studies, longtime student of Middle East politics. She's the author of Challenging Empire, How People, Governments, and the UN Defy U.S. Power. And she watched very closely and listened to what General Petraeus had to say this week. And she listened and she listened and she listened for any mention of the so-called global war on terror. Didn't hear one. What she did hear were a series of repeated saber-rattling mentions of Iran. The threat, the ambitions, the destructive potential, the terror-related activities. Iran, Iran, Iran. That's what she heard from Petraeus this week. Then, in hour two, we'll hear from somebody you don't hear from much in U.S. media. Jon Snow, longtime British TV newscaster, for many years Washington correspondent for the British Independent Television News. He is now working in radio, but he recently went to Iran and has some very interesting things to say about what's happening in that country. So he'll join us at some point in hour two. And then in hour three, we're going to hear from a colleague of mine, Amy Goodman. She's the author, most recently with her brother David, of a book, Static: Government Liars, Media Cheerleaders, and the People Who Fight Back. It's out now in paperback. She's the host of Pacifica's Democracy Now! Program that I'm sure many of you watch or listen to. She's going to be in Colorado this weekend, but what I want to talk to her about today is the reporting she and her colleagues have been doing on that program about Sheikh Abdul Sattar Buzaig al-Risha, Abu Risha. That's the Sunni cleric who supposedly changed the course of the war in favor of the U.S. by turning against al-Qaeda. He's the guy who both Petraeus and George W. have been praising to the skies in the last few days. The guy who David Petraeus called responsible for the most significant development in the past 6 months in Iraq. A model leader, legend in his own time, the guy who brought peace to Anbar. Well, he was killed yesterday in an attack near his home. And if I'm not mistaken, this killing is going to somehow get blamed on Iran. We'll talk about it. Amy Goodman will be here. Amy Goodman, Phyllis Bennett, Jon Snow, all coming up, and your calls. Right after the break, we will go to your calls. Again, I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to Air America Radio. This is the Tom Hartman Show. And we will be back with your calls. More from Bush, and Petraeus, and we'll hear maybe a little from Jay Leno. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. I
guess the Secret Service had a little scare yesterday. Did you hear about this? Pretty scary. For a couple hours, they could not find President Bush. They're not located. Turns out he's just hiding behind General Petraeus.
Oh, the night hosts are having their way with the president. Their way with W. 866-303-2270. But that doesn't mean any of us are in the clear. I'm Laura Flanders sitting in for Tom Hartman, and the number is 866-303-2270. Coming up, we'll hear from Phyllis Bennis, from Jon Snow, and Amy Goodman in our last hour. She's on her way out to Colorado. Watch out, you folks in Fort Collins and Denver. She's been reporting this week on the very sheikh, his casual name is Abu Risha, the Sunni cleric who apparently helped to change the course of the war in Anbar province by turning against al-Qaeda and agreeing to work with the Americans. Well, on the 1 year to the day anniversary of that decision by Abu Risha, the guy was assassinated yesterday morning in an extraordinarily, I would say, delicately timed attack. Scheduled not only to send a clear message to those who might be looking at that decision of the sheikh, but also to the U.S. administration in the White House. Because, of course, that killing then took place just hours before George W. Bush went on the air to praise, among other people, Sheikh Abu Risha. There was some very interesting stuff in the reporting that Amy Goodman's colleagues have been doing this week on what's happening in Anbar. And I'm hoping that she can talk about it on the program. I'm afraid it indicates a situation very rich in potential, let's just say, for a finger to be pointed at Iran. Let's remember, this sheikh, a Sunni, the Iraqi government disproportionately representing at this point Shiites, their biggest allies, mostly Iran. If you're going to talk tribal, the layout is convenient for the Americans. They've now armed both sides in what is clearly a civil war, except it's almost as if the divisions that usually follow civil war are anticipating them, are happening before. Because let's be clear, all this talk about Anbar province being peaceful is just misinterpreting the situation. It's not peace you're seeing there. It's ethnic cleansing. The Shiites have mostly been wiped out of the place. It's safer for Americans. That's what they mean by safe. It's not safe for the previously multi, you know, sectarian, heterogeneous community that used to live there. It has now been ethnically cleansed. Is there a potential there that this attack on Abu Risa could be blamed on Shiites connected with Iraq? I mean, with Iran? I think so. And particularly in some of the descriptions that Amy Goodman's reporting aired this week that indicate that people in Anbar, although Shiites are mostly absent, people in Anbar, their greatest fear, the people they're most frightened of, are Iranian. They're worried about the Mehdi army, which is really nowhere in evidence. But according to the reporting I heard this week on Democracy Now!, if you ask a local Sunni freedom fighter, the Americans are calling them, they were previously the people shooting at the Americans, now they're the ones we're working with. If you ask a local person who they're afraid of, they'll say the Mehdi army. They know no limits in their violence and they're all Iranian. So how many reporters is it going to take to go to the Anbar province, interview a bunch of people who say that, before the Bush administration says, aha, here's our opportunity to blame Iran? Now, you may say I'm crazy, but I'm watching this. I'm listening to the drumbeats coming out of the right-wing think tanks, and I think Naomi Klein is onto something when she says the think tanks are the people who are paid to make an argument, paid by the people who make the tanks. 866-303-2270. All right, you can see where I'm going. Let's take some calls. We've got Evan on the line in Monroe, Washington. Hi, Evan. Welcome to the program. Glad to have you.
Hi.
How are
Aloha
you?
Aloha there.
Aloha.
Yes. Rick, am I connected?
You are on the air. Speak to the world.
Okay. I'm a veteran.
Okay.
Okay, and one thing, Bush is not acting like a wounded dog. He's acting like a rabid animal.
Okay.
Okay. The other thing I wanted to comment on is this thing of the, you know, the assassination of this person.
Sheikh Abu Risa,
Yes. I don't want to be disrespectful of the way I would pronounce his name. It's not so much as the finger pointing. Especially when it is so timely that this has occurred and orchestrated. It is more to look at the hand that orchestrated.
Well, you went there, not me, but believe me, it passed my mind, too.
You know what I mean?
I knew what you mean.
So they try to catch us to make pointing fingers, and I say, stop ourselves at that. We're always doing that. I say, look at the hand.
All right, Evan, thank you so much. Appreciate the call. Steve's on the line in Albany, New York. Hey, Steve, welcome.
Hi. Laura, thanks for taking my call.
Glad to have you.
I wanted to call. You had asked some questions at the beginning of the program, and I wanted to say I don't think that the general or the president or the Republicans or even the Democrats really have a clue as to where, you know, what's really happening in Iraq or what our troops actually know and what they think. And as evidence of that, I wanted to let the listeners know that on September 29th in upstate New York in Syracuse, active duty soldiers from Fort Drum have called for a peace action. This may be the first in the nation. They're definitely one of the first group of Iraqi veterans against the war who are active duty.
Mm.
And they're we're having a peace action that they've called for.
Mm. Now, that's very significant. If anybody out there saw the film Sir, No Sir, extraordinary documentary on the role that active duty soldiers played in the Vietnam War, they'll get it. Just what kind of a shiver it sends down the spine of those in power when active duty folks get up and protest. Because this administration and everyone has tried to so criminalize any action resembling that by active duty folks. And the law isn't on the favor, on the side of the people who behave that way, who take that stand, that it has been a tremendous of significance when an active duty service person says, well, you know what, regardless of the threat, the regardless of the cost for me and my family, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I understand that this is actually one of the first active duty groups the Iraqi Veterans Against the War. I mean, these guys have been there several times already.
Yeah.
And Fort Drum has lost more people than any other base.
So that's up in Syracuse, New York. Have you got any information about
Syracuse,
where people can go if they want
Syracuse,
more information?
New York. Neighbor, our local website here is Neighbors for Peace with a number 4, .org/SEPT, abbreviation for September 29.
All right. So that's Neighbors for Peace with a digit number 4, forpeace.org/September, S-E-P-T. 29. I want to thank you so much for calling in, Steve, and I hope that you'll stay in touch with us when that happens. I would love to have a reporter on the ground bringing us the sound. That's a huge, significant historic development.
We're actually going to have a panel discussion in the evening with Scott Ritter and Jimmy Massey and
anybody else who's left on the street.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Steve, good luck. I really appreciate
you.
It, and I appreciate the call. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. Phyllis Bennis will tell me if I'm absolutely insane on my Iran fears. We'll hear from Jon Snow, who's just been in Iran in the second hour. And in our third hour, Amy Goodman will be here, bring us up to speed on what she's been reporting about vis-a-vis this Sheikh Abu Risa this week. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to Air America Radio. This is the Tom Hartmann Show. Connect the dots. Open lines Friday. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to Air America Radio, the Tom Hartmann Program, where Tom usually sits. I'm sitting. Well, not really. I'm the other side of the country, but I'm Laura Flanders. We're going to be talking just a bit about what exactly we should take from, well, the whole darn week, let's face it. General Petraeus and Ray Kroc's commentary at the beginning of the week in front of Congress, and George W. Bush's speech last night. There's a good piece of blogging on the Talking Points memo today. Josh Marshall really getting up some heat around the reference the president made to the 36 nations who have troops on the ground in Iraq. Now, there is so much in the speech that you could pick holes in, but Spencer Ackerman points out that most of the countries having anything to do with this insane U.S. initiative have agreed to Iraqis come to their countries for training, but they haven't gone to Iraq. Spain, for example, is willing to train groups of 25 Iraqis just outside Madrid, but they aren't putting no boots on the ground. Unless they're talking about Iraqi troops on the ground in Iraq. Well, that ain't no big shakes. Who actually has, quote-unquote, boots on the ground? The 36 that the president is talking about? The 36 countries? Iceland. One. Public Service Information Officer. One. That's somebody you know who answers questions. He's going to serve in the, or she's going to serve in the NATO mission in Baghdad. One person, one, well, I guess that's two boots, maybe, if they have boots in the Office of Public Information. Italy, eight officers. in the mission. Portugal thinking about sending up to 10. With a coalition of the willing like that, no wonder, in fact, who we've got in Iraq are people like Blackwater. Sheila in Eugene, Oregon wants to talk about Blackwater. Let's bring her on the air to do that. Hey, Sheila, welcome to the program. Just bring people up to speed if they haven't been paying attention or haven't seen Jeremy Scahill's book, Blackwater. Who are they? What are they? And why do you care?
Okay, I think Blackwater is the elephant in the room right now. First of all, we know that they're in Iraq, and I've heard that their numbers are almost equal to the numbers of our troops.
All right, let's remind people, this is a private contracting firm with connections to the religious right, connections to this administration. Basically, they are the people to whom many of our services that used to be done by national forces working for the U.S. government, working for the Pentagon, they're the people that are contracted to do a lot of the work, including security. So we're talking sort of private armies as well as security forces.
Right. Okay. So we know we've got the private army there that we're overpaying outrageously for the same things that our troops do, and they get paid a pittance. The other big thing that I'm concerned about is we've been hearing about Blackwater training camps around this country.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that Blackwater is Bush's Gestapo, that they are training to do Bush's dirty work when he's ready to do it, which could be an election that doesn't turn out right. In other words, the Republicans win, even though the Democrats may be shown to be way ahead. Anything that Bush wants to hold the people down. Chile had the same problem where people denied anything was happening until it happened.
Yeah, I mean, this country, I thought once that, you think about World War II, Germans, if it was ever true that U.S. security personnel were just simply disappearing people off the streets of U.S. cities, we, the Americans, would not stand for it. And yet that is exactly
what happened.
It happened in my own hometown of New York right after 9/11. It's still happening in the name of, I don't know, clamping down on immigration, you name it. And what are we doing? Not much.
Well, the thing, people don't realize that Blackwater is there to hold us down.
Yeah. Well, you would remember, people would be getting this, and I appreciate you making the call, Sheila, if they had paid more attention to New Orleans and the Gulf after the broken levees in Katrina.
Well, there they supposedly were helping.
Yeah, but if you actually talk to people, as I did and as we did on this network, who were in New Orleans, for example, during that period, what you heard were scared people, black people, trying to gather water and food for their families and their neighbors and being threatened by Blackwater troops riding around in trucks in the name of security, making their life an absolute terror.
Now, can you imagine another Kent State? I can.
Yeah.
I can, and this is what really scares me. I don't put anything beyond this administration.
I mean, I'm worried about, I have to say, I'm worried. I'm glad he called in, but I'm worried about those active duty troops that are going to go and do a protest September 29th in Syracuse.
Well, I wish I could be there. I'd protest with them.
Yeah, we need to be there holding their hands.
But this is a very scary thing, and I think there has to be more.
But, it's not just the fear, Sheila, about what Blackwater and other private armies and mercenary groups could be used to do in this country. And we already have private folks running our prisons. We already have private security guards in many of our schools.
Well, that's why we have such building of prisons, because the unions of the employees of the prisons, they want the prison.
Yeah, not
they
just them. Not just them, but people like Dick Cheney. If you are a senator from a rural state like Wyoming, for example, one congressional representative, you can increase your population for the purpose of the electoral college calculations by having prisoners on your turf. You get to count their heads for electoral college purposes, so you get to increase your influence come election year, presidential election year, but you don't have to let them vote. That's perfect.
And what do you think? Why do you think that New Orleans is not being rebuilt? Because they don't want the people to come back. They are Democrats.
Yeah, well,
and
that's part of it.
And they want New New Orleans and Louisiana to be a red state.
But Sheila, I also want you to add to this part of the picture that while we in the peace movement, while we say troops out of Iraq, and magazines like The Nation, sponsor the program I do here at Air America Radio, Weekends, Radio Nation, you know, called a year ago for the speedy end to the war in Iraq, we need to get a bit more sophisticated about our language. Because it's not just that we want the troops home. We need to get the U.S. occupation ended, and that includes the private mercenary occupation. We've got to get smarter.
Well, that's right.
I want to thank you for your call. Thanks so much, Sheila. Good luck to you. All right, one last call before the break. Farid in New York. Farid, welcome to the program. You've only got about a minute.
Hi, Laura. I just wanted to applaud you for bringing up this issue of Iran.
Mm.
And I wish more progressive talk shows talk about this issue. This is a disaster looming.
I think it's huge.
Bush and Cheney definitely want to bomb Iran. The only question is whether the Europeans and the Chinese and the Russians and the Republican circles inside the U.S. Are on board with that. I don't have any trust for Congress or Democrats to stand up to them. But these other groups may or may not be on board.
I mean, it begins to sound very, very familiar. Just this week, September 6th, you had the New York Sun, which is the conservative daily here in New York, one of them, predicting that the Bush administration is going to be stepping up its diplomatic campaign against Iran. Then you had Petraeus talk about Iran. I don't know how many times we'll hear from Phyllis Bennis in his testimony. And Bush did it again last night. Right. Meanwhile, you've got the International Atomic Energy Agency Director General Mohammed al-Baradei saying, in fact, all this saber-rattling about Iran and nuclear power, nuclear weapons, he's saying Iran is agreeing to cooperate in giving the information we've been asking for.
And they are dismissing the IAEA's report and they're saying poo-pooing that.
Now, what does that remind you of?
Yeah, well, deja vu all over again.
At least we can laugh. All right, thanks, Farid. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We are going to talk about Iran. You betcha. I promise you've got my word on it. It's Laura Flanders sitting in for Tom Hartman. This is Air America Radio. We'll be back after the news at the top of the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio. Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
It is Air America Radio as ever was, but this ain't no Tom Hartman. Just for today, it's me, Laura Flanders. You're listening to Air America Radio. That number again, 866-303-2270. And if you're wondering where the heck I popped up from, well, you can hear my show weekends here on Air America. It's called Radio Nation, and you can find out more about it at radionation.org. That's www.radionation.org. You can also find there a link to write to me if you want, but I'm not going to be able to access your emails until after the show. Just this once. All right, so we're talking about the news of the week. We are connecting dots. We've got open lines, and I'm putting out a very scary idea. I'm saying we've got a lame duck president. That's not lame. He's not even limping. In fact, as one of our callers put it, he's like a rabid animal. You got Democratic leaders having a ball over the notion that his poll numbers are in the toilet. But I'm not having no ball. I'm worried. If this is the last 16 months of this administration, they still have all the power in their hands of what they consider to be the unitary executive. It's not in our Constitution. They made it up. It's them without the need of any balance of powers of the judiciary or the legislative branch. We know what this president's bad at, all the stuff that has to do with humanity and beating hearts and looking after people and the future and the planet. What he's good at, distracting the nation, driving up war profits, helping out his buddies, and, well, being at war. Good at in the sense that he knows how to use it to his advantage. What has he always wanted? What has he talked about since day one of his administration? That axis of evil. It was his favorite line. He never slurred it, never tripped over it, never stumbled, never stopped. When he doesn't mess up, you know he means it. I'm just saying. Who do you think is going to get the blame for the killing yesterday morning of this administration's main man in Sunni Iraq, which is to say, Sheikh Abu Risa, Sheikh Abdul Sattar Abu Risa, the guy who formed a pro-U.S. Anbar Awakening group in Anbar province a year ago yesterday? Who do you think is going to get the blame for his killing? I don't think it would be difficult to put that blame on Iran. And what I've been hearing this week is Iran, Iran, Iran. I heard it from General Petraeus. I heard it from George W. Bush. We've been hearing it from the right-wing press and the pundits. So, to provide something of a reality check for me, 866-303-2270, there's you, 866-303-2270. There's also our next guest, Phyllis Bennett. She's fellow of the Institute for Policy Studies and author most recently of Challenging Empire, How People, Governments, and the UN Defy U.S. Power. And she puts out fantastic talking points on a regular basis that you can sign up to receive. We'll tell you how before the end of the program. Phyllis, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Laura. Great to be with you.
So what did you hear? Let's start first with General Petraeus and then tell me whether Bush accelerated or calmed your concerns.
Well, I think the concern about Iran is a very real one. This is, we should always remember, this is an administration that has proved itself willing to take the most reckless actions in the face of massive both domestic and international public opinion and in defiance of international and domestic law. So the question of, for those, let me just say, for those people who say, well, even this administration isn't crazy enough to go after Iran.
That's what I was saying.
Wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. It's not about being crazy. They're not crazy. But they are driven by ideology and not by politics on the ground. That means they're willing to take risks that every one of their advisors may say is dangerous, reckless, going to make things worse, and they will do it anyway because they're driven by this belief. It's a belief system. It's not facts. You know, fact-based action is very different than ideology-based action.
That's right. They said you live in the reality-based world.
Right.
We live in the world that makes our own reality.
Makes our own reality, exactly. So what are we looking at? In Petraeus's initial speech, the speech hardly mentioned the so-called global war on terror. It came up a couple of times in questions, but basically it was ignored. And it's interesting that one of the congressmen who was questioning General Petraeus that very first day on Monday, when he first made that speech, which he then made four more times, he pushed back on that issue a little bit, saying that essentially that if the surge was really working to find and eliminate terrorists who could attack the U.S., that nobody would want to withdraw any troops. But that isn't the case, is it, he said, because the Iraq war is not about terrorism. The problem was, of course, that Congressman Ackerman didn't go further and say, what is it about then? Because the real target du jour for that speech was Iran, again. And this is what General Petraeus described as the counterbalance to this very optimistic spin he was putting on everything going on in Iraq. We can look at what's happening in Iraq and say, well, in this particular neighborhood, there's a bit of good news. And in that region, there was one short-term spike in nonviolence. You know, it was an extraordinary, not just cherry-picking, but narrow, narrow focus on anecdotal evidence to prove, supposedly, a very broad point.
All right, so we had on the one hand this cherry-picked evidence to suggest that there was some good news, but then he said there was the other side of the
story. Exactly, and the bad news he described as counterbalancing that good news was all about Iran. We didn't know, he says, that Iran was so involved in Iraq. Hello? Iran lives next door. They've always been involved. The current U.S.-backed government in Iraq and many of their friends and half the militia leaders in Iraq spent their years of exile during the regime of Saddam Hussein when Saddam Hussein was being backed by the U.S., spent their years of exile in Iran. What a surprise that that has continued. Iran clearly has an interest in maintaining ties in Iran, commercial ties, presumably military ties, as well as longstanding and powerful political ties. That's nothing new. But there was a level of focus on Iran that was very, very frightening. It was then joined after Petraeus's own speech, where everything that was negative that he spoke of was linked to Iran. Then Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice joined in, saying that Iran was, quote, a very troublesome neighbor. And then her deputy, John Negroponte, the deputy secretary of state, weighed in with his own version, which was a set of allegations, unproved, about Iranian arms being provided to the Taliban in Afghanistan.
Mm, it all begins to sound so familiar, Phyllis. And you add to that the Mohammed al-Baradei situation, where according to the executive director, the director of the International Atomic Energy Agency, he's saying Iran is actually cooperating, giving the information that the world's been asking for about nuclear power development and so forth.
Boy, does this
add
sound
that
like
to the picture. And
February 2003,
right,
the same Mohammed al-Baradei saying the same thing, that at that time the regime of Saddam Hussein was cooperating with the international inspectors. Both the nuclear inspectors and the other WMD inspectors were getting full access in Iraq, just as had been demanded. Yes, there had been a period when they were not cooperating, and yes, that had been true in Iran as well, but now they're cooperating. Is that acknowledged by the United States? Absolutely not. We're seeing this ratcheting up of threats against Iran. Now, I must say, you asked, Laura, whether I'm more or less nervous about this since hearing President Bush last night.
Right.
I'm nervous about many things after hearing President Bush last night. But ironically, Iran slipped down a notch or two in my litany of what I'm terribly afraid of, at least for today. Might go back up tomorrow. But at least for today, the fact that President Bush only mentioned Iran once did not make it a highlight of his speech. It was fascinating to watch. You know, I can't believe that he still thinks that this claim of linking Iraq to 9/11 somehow still works, but apparently some advisor is telling him it does, because that was his starting point last night. Once again, this is all about the terrorists who attacked us on September 11th. We've got to keep after them there so they don't come back and get us here.
And was it a coincidence or was it not that the administration chose this morning to release, I guess it was last night, to release the transcript of the supposed admission of one of their 9/11 suspects that,
oh,
yes,
Laura,
indeed,
that's
they were
just
responsible.
Just a coincidence. Just a coincidence. How can you say such a thing? Well, these things just happen. It was going through the judicial process, and it just happened. So that's not to say that the threat of a U.S. attack on Iran is not a real one. It's a very real one. Unfortunately, the congressional Democrats, who are talking big against Petraeus, we have yet to see whether they will act on that talk. There are a number of things they could be doing that do not require a veto-proof majority. You know, this is what we're consistently hearing from the Democratic leadership. We can't do anything. We don't have a veto-proof majority. And somehow the journalists don't come back to them and say, well, there's other things you could do. Why aren't you doing them? For example, the Appropriations Committee has to begin the debate on next week's new appropriation bill. You know, Laura, and I think your listeners probably know, that the Bush administration is asking for $141 billion more money.
That's right.
For the war in Iraq, and they're probably going to add $50 billion more to that. All it would take would be the chairman of the Appropriations Committee, Congressman David Obie of Wisconsin, a progressive anti-war congressman whose constituents I know have been talking about this, to say, you know what, we're not voting this out of committee. It's going to be locked up in the committee just like the Republicans did so well on so many issues in the past. We're just not going to vote it out. President Bush can't veto something that hasn't been voted on.
Mm. Phyllis, hold it right there. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back, and I want you to, we can hear from Wisconians. What are they called, Wisconians? I was just out there. I should know. David Obie, if you're in his constituency, give us a call. Are you going to send a message to him just simply not to bring this appropriations bill up for a vote? Because if they don't have a vote on it, there ain't going to be that appropriation. But secondly, I want Phyllis to address my concerns that there may be something in the mess surrounding the assassination of Sheikh Abu Risa in Anbar province that could give this administration pretext for war with Iran.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
We're back. I'm Laura Flanders, listening to Air America Radio, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Tom will be back next week. Don't you worry. Don't you fret. I'm just here with you for the next few hours. If you want to check out my show, Radio Nation Weekend, here, feel free. You can get information at radionation.org. Right now, we're talking with Phyllis Bennis. She's a fellow of the Institute for Policy Studies. And I should say that the Institute is holding a teach-in this weekend on confronting the triple crisis of climate change, the end of easy oil, and global resource depletion. You can get more information at ips-dc.org. That's www.ips-dc.org. You can also go there to sign up for Phyllis's very excellent talking points and occasional emails to her fans and followers, and probably her antagonists, too. Phyllis and I have been talking about what we heard in the words of General Petraeus and George W. Bush this week. And specifically, in case time runs out, Phyllis, yes, we want to encourage people to push, put pressure on people like David Obey on the Democratic side, who have the power to simply not bring to a vote appropriations bills for the next $141 billion this administration wants from Congress. But while they're doing that, and while we're all thinking about what can be done vis-a-vis Iraq, I'm very concerned about Iran. And I'm particularly concerned in light of this killing yesterday, early morning, Anbar province, Ramadi, of one Sheikh Abu Risa, who has been kind of the Bush administration's poster child of turning against al-Qaeda, Sunnis working with the Americans. He was assassinated yesterday. No one's claimed responsibility. Obviously, there's a lot of people who could have it in for him. He was killed on the anniversary of the founding of this alliance for Anbar Awakening, pro-U.S. alliance. But I don't think it would be difficult to point a finger at the Sunni opposition, the Shiites in Iran.
No, that's certainly true, and we've seen this before, when that the U.S. is really focusing its anti-Iran rhetoric not on the earlier focus, which was Iran's so-called nuclear weapons capacity, because, of course, they don't have a nuclear weapons capacity, although that didn't stop the U.S. from relying on that for quite a long time. But now, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, sorry. My radio has changed for a minute. But now, wait, there's more. The more is that what they're really focusing on now is not the nuclear issue as much as the ostensible alleged role of Iran in arming the Iraqi resistance fighters who may be killing U.S. troops. And in fact, we've heard that language from President Bush and from other top U.S. officials, both military and political. Iranians are already at war with us. Iran is killing our troops.
Now, what about with respect to our troops? If a man like this, Abu Risa, who was the guy who George Bush was photographed with 10 days ago in Ramadi when Bush was there for his visit, if somebody like that is such an important ally for the United States, does he kind of get covered under this umbrella of U.S. troops?
Well, I think that he doesn't get covered under U.S. troops exactly. There's a particular danger of that the U.S. could really be setting up the claim of self-defense. You know, Article 51 of the U.N. Charter says that a country has the right of self-defense if it has been attacked.
Now, why would that be a particular threat?
Well, the language that we've heard from the Bush administration is Iran is killing our troops. That implies they're at war with us, and therefore we could claim the right of so-called self-defense to go to war against Iran. It's not true, but that doesn't mean it wouldn't happen.
Would we have to go back to the UN? Would we have to go back to Congress?
Well, yes, we would, but that doesn't mean we would do it. Legally, yes, because legally the right of self-defense is a qualified right. It's qualified, number one. It only kicks in once you've been attacked. That's first qualification. They're already claiming that's happened. Second qualification is you have the right of self-defense until the Security Council can meet and decide what to do about it. But we know from earlier bitter experience that that is not how the U.S. reads it. They simply claim this is self-defense. We have the right to do whatever we want. In the case of Afghanistan, they went to the U.N. Security Council. The Security Council, after 9/11, voted unanimously to support everything the U.S. asked for.
About 20 seconds. We've got about 20 seconds.
But the U.S. didn't ask for the right to go to war. They could do it again without permission, without legality, and blaming it on the murder of the sheikhs is one way they might get away with it.
Phyllis Venice, you haven't cheered me up at all. Challenging Empire, How People, Governments, and the U.N. Defy U.S. Power. To sign up for her talking points, go to ips-dc.org. We'll be back. We'll continue our conversation after the break. Thank you, Phyllis. I'm Laura Flanders. Stay tuned.
Is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. The
success of a free Iraq is critical to the security of the United States. A free Iraq will deny al-Qaeda a safe haven. A free Iraq will counter the destructive ambitions of Iran. A free Iraq will marginalize extremists, unleash the talent of its people, and be an anchor of stability in the region. A free Iraq will set an example for people across the Middle East. A free Iraq will be our partner in the fight against terror. And that will make us safer here at home.
What did you hear? Safer, terror, Iran, ambitions, they're here. Rearrange all those words. What you get? Reason to be afraid. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to Air America Radio. I'm sitting in for Tom Hartman. Our number is 866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0. We just heard from Phyllis Bennis of the Institute for Policy Studies. In just a bit, we'll get Jon Snow, longtime Washington correspondent for Independent Television News out of the UK. He just came back from Iran a few weeks back. In our next hour, I hope that you will move in close to your radio or your computer, or put that little earpiece more firmly in your ear. We're going to have with us Pacifica's Amy Goodman of the Democracy Now! Program. She's been doing reporting all week on Sheikh Abdul Sattar Bouzargal Risha, the guy who was killed yesterday, a year to the day after he formed a much ballyhooed pro-U.S. Sunni alliance in Anbar province. It was a year to the day after he did that, 10 days after he met with President Bush in Ramadi and posed for a photo op. The president and the White House's favorite poster Sunni, if you like. Poster child of the pro-U.S. Sunni movement in Anbar. He was killed yesterday, and what I've been raising concerns about is just how easy it would be to blame Shiites operating out of Iraq. I'm sorry, out of Iran for that attack. We've already got a chorus of war drums beating that part of the problem in Iraq is Iranian-fueled. And I'm afraid that at this moment that chorus could get louder and get more ammunition. All right, let's take some calls. We've got a mystery caller in San Francisco who I want to go to. Mystery caller, welcome to the program. Give us your name.
Hi, Laura. My name is Ian.
Hi, Ian. Gotcha.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to bring to your attention, if you haven't talked about it already today, the fact that in the Independent of London, you know, one of their major newspapers there, they reported a couple of days ago that General Petraeus had told an Iraqi official a couple of years ago that he planned to run for president not in 2008, but in 2012.
I'm really glad you brought this to our audience's attention. They did report, which is to say Patrick Coburn reported in The Independent. He happens to be my uncle. I hate to tout the family here, but yeah, important report. His reporting from Iraq is stellar. Patrick's been there for many, many years. And this piece did sort of fly entirely under the radar in the U.S., except it did appear on Patrick's brother Alexander's website, counterpunch.org.
Well, the reason I think it's critical is because the president has said all along, we can't have Washington politicians making decisions about this war. We want to go to our generals, the non-political generals. Well, now, if we have a general, General Petraeus, who has for at least 2 years been planning to run for president, then he is, in fact, a general. but he is also a politician.
We can't have politicians. We want to be politicians.
Well, and the thing is that, you know, he's been portrayed as I'm just coming. He portrays himself as I'm coming here non-political. I'm just coming as a general to give you the facts on the ground when he's running for president.
Not only that, I mean, you don't even need to have seen this. I mean, the fact was he was asked by a then senior advisor and spokesperson at the Iraqi Interior Ministry, asked, you know, if he was thinking of running for president. I asked him, says this guy, I asked him if he was planning to run in 08, and he said, no, that would be too soon. And then he went on to talk about 2012 or beyond. But, you know, you don't even need to have this in the back of your brain, chilling though it is, to know that this guy is not the, you know, the military neutral voice that we've been waiting for. You're right. The president's been saying, wait for the generals to weigh in. Wait for the generals. Wait for the men in the military to come. And the media can be usually relied upon to fall into a kind of 9/11 inspired swoon around now anytime somebody in a uniform gets on the screen. But this is no neutral general. This is a political operative from way back, at least from a year ago, when he was penning editorials praising the situation in Iraq when he knew they weren't true, but it was the eve of an election.
Well, I think the Democrats should challenge him on this and say, did you say that a couple of years ago, and are you planning to run for president in 2012? And that's your right if you do, but the American people need to know that they're dealing here not only with a general, but a politician as well. Mm. And that should factor in how we consider anything he said.
Yeah, thank you very much, Ian. I mean, I have to say, I think the most effective protest from Monday in the House was the protest of Ray McGovern, former CIA operative, the guy who was very much involved in protesting the Vietnam War, now heads up intelligence veterans for sanity or against war or something. He was arrested in the hearing rooms Monday, standing up along with other people from Code Pink and Iraq Veterans Against the War. He was arrested demanding that Crocker and Petraeus be sworn in. And it was a simple demand, but it raised a huge question. Why weren't they? And it made the point you're making that these people's testimony is suspect. So I thank you for the call, Ian. I really do appreciate it. All right, let's take one more call. We've got Fern on the line in Portland. Hey, Fern, welcome to the program. Glad to have you.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, regarding the situation with Iran, I see it I'd like to just add to the discussion this perspective, and
sure.
That is, first of all, our King George has basically destroyed our great American ground troops, but he has the fleet in position, he has the nukes armed, pointing at Iran, and it would only take his word to have Iran disappear in a cloud of subatomic dust.
Mm. You're right. The fleet's been there on quote-unquote maneuvers for as long as I can remember.
Well, and the American people, he counts on the short attention span of the general American people, whom the oligarchs for decades have kept drugged with sickness, ignorance, poverty, television, all these other distractions.
Well, one other thing, drugged with lack of confidence, lack of belief in our own power.
Lack of belief, yes. And this brings me to what I'd like to flog here, and that is for us American people. I'm a long time, well, amateur historian. I was a school teacher. I've been a political activist. But reading American history, we need to know as American citizens our true American history. Read Howard Zinn, A People's History. Read, there's a long forgotten progressive, and it's, that figures, doesn't it, that he's a progressive and he's long forgotten, but he was a great progressive historian in the 20th century named John D. Hicks. And, the way I was reintroduced to him was at a thrift store. I found The Populist Revolt, published in 1931, which is a detailed history of the progressive movement. He also wrote Republican Ascendancy in 1921 to 1933.
All right, Fern, to jump to the chase, your point being, if we knew more about that period, we would what?
put it all in perspective and know what we American people, who we are and how we run our country.
And what we're capable of. I've got to let you go, but when you go back and you study the progressive movement and the progressive party in particular, and there were progressives and populists, but the progressives caught my attention this week because, well, last week I was in Wisconsin at Fighting Bob Fest, which celebrates the founder of the progressive party, Bob La Follette, out of Wisconsin, former senator, governor of Wisconsin. What Bob La Follette did, among other things, was stand up strongly when everybody said it was tantamount to treason. And somebody on the floor of the House, or the Senate rather, he was a senator, even handed him a noose or a rope to make himself a noose out of. He stood up and opposed World War One, saying that this was a war of empire, a war of choice that was only going to beef up the power of the corporations and have a whole lot of regular people killed. Regular Americans, he said, had no beef with the people at war in Europe. And he stood by that position, ran for office another time even after that, and won with an increased majority. So, yes, you're right. History teaches, one thing history teaches, is not to be so darn timid and scared. Because, hey, well, you can read my book if you want, Blue Grit, True Democrats Take Back Politics from the Politicians. Tom and I agree. The future is in our hands. America, we the people supposedly rule. The biggest defeat we have is the defeat we succumb to before we even try. And if we knew our history better, if we knew about the Bob La Follettes, if we knew about the Eugene Debses, if we knew about the progressive parties, the populist parties, what they've won and fought for in this country, well, I'm just carrying on the flogging that Fern began. Thank you so much for the call. When we come back, Jon Snow will join us from the UK. He's been recently in Iran and may have some interesting things to add to this story. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Tom Hartman, 866-303-2270, 866-303-AARZERO. It's Friday.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
When I want to stomp my feet, it's right now because we just missed Jon Snow. He's on his way to the studio. My mistake. Got my timing wrong here. Dang. Dang and blast, because you know why I wanted you to talk to this guy. And luckily, there's a lot of what he has to say you can find online. He hosts a radio, he hosts a show, all right, on Channel 4 News. And he interviewed live last night, Channel 4, the UK television station. Aired last night while we were being lulled into whatever kind of delusion by our president. Jon Snow was interviewing the president of Iran. He was interviewing Ahmadinejad live on Channel 4 last night. Do they have different news over there or what? And asking him directly about the allegations that both the UK and the US have made accusing Iran of fighting a proxy war inside Iraq. Now, I don't know what you think, but I think it might be news that the president of Iran, talking on the television network, a mainstream television channel of our number one ally, Great Britain, tells the English-speaking world, people who watch Channel 4, that it is entirely an allegation. He says, what you are saying is an allegation. I'm reading the English translated transcript here on John's website. What you're saying is an allegation. We also accuse the English and the U.S. of occupying and violating Iraq. Fair enough, frankly. I think the U.S. and Britain should amend their own views and behavior. If they want to blame others for their defeat, they can be sure their defeats will be repeated. He makes some distinctions between the U.K. and the U.S. Then Jon Snow goes on and asks him, is it true there are factions that you support in southern Iraq? Therefore, do you regard it as a victory for Iran that the British have left Basra? Ahmadinejad responds, does the English government think it's been defeated by Iran in Iraq or by the people of Iraq? And Jon continues this conversation. You can read it online. But the point is, we are kidding ourselves. If this discussion of Iran is made a detail in our thinking about this situation. Now, it may be that the U.S. media doesn't want you to be too excited about Iran. I don't know, but I do think it's strange that you could have a major network television broadcast in the U.K. interview the president of Iran, and for all his bombast and bluster, he is responding directly to what U.S. leaders are saying in Congress, General Petraeus, George W. Bush. And we're not told about it, we the American people? Do we not have the right to make up our minds for ourselves? Are we so monkey-do, monkey-say, we have our fingers in our ears that we don't even want to hear what the other side says? And does it not strike you as strange in the way that it strikes me as strange that this is the subject of hot news in the UK? And a detail here in the United States, a detail that Mohammed al-Baradei of the International Atomic Energy Agency is saying, well, in fact, Iranians are cooperating with our requests for information vis-a-vis their nuclear program. A detail that the president of Iran is willing to sit down and talk and refute the allegations, you can believe him or not believe him, but it's news that he's making the time to talk to Jon Snow for the British Channel 4 News. Do you think it's strange that this is the big story in England and it's not even news here? We're not even talking about it. Tell me if I'm wrong. Let's hear from Marcia in St. Louis. Briefly, Marcia, welcome to the program.
Hi. Iran closes down the Straits of Hormuz, then our oil prices are going to skyrocket. Our whole economy is going to tank, and then it'll be time to bring Blackwater in. I think he just wants high oil prices.
Well, he's getting high oil prices, and the more crisis in the Middle East, the higher the oil prices go.
Yes.
We've always said it's not about controlling the fields, although they'd like that too, but they've had to give up on that, at least, you know, explicitly, the U.S. government. But it is about controlling the price, and that they're doing with great success.
Could I? Oh, did you know that if we took our old, outdated sewer systems, we could take the sewer.
All right. How are you getting me from the
gasoline?
How are you getting me from the Straits of Hormuz to your sewer system? I'm confused.
Oh, because then all of our gasoline would be made from the sewer.
I wish I could run my car on the sewers that run more or less down the street of where I live.
Gas and electricity.
Oh, well.
Let's just get a new sewer system.
Methane will save us. All right, Marcia, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's hear very quickly from anyone else want to talk about Iran. Chuck in California, briefly. Chuck, go.
Morning, Laura.
Morning.
Several times I've heard Bush mention, if you knew what I knew. I secretly, or Sparnish behind the scenes, Israel is telling Bush, if you don't do something about Iran, we will. And he doesn't have the nerve or the sense to call their bluff and say, listen, you do what we say, not vice versa. And also, I think the Jewish people in this country have to man up. You know, they're the third rail nobody will touch. In the Second World War, the Italian and German people stayed with America. They didn't go with their home country. And also, in the long run, I think it'd be good for Israel if we don't do exactly what they want.
Well, most of the Israelis would agree with you 100%, Chuck. I mean, it's always extraordinary to me that we talk in this country about Israel as if the Israeli people agreed with the policies of the government. Most of them are in as much disagreement with the policies of their government as we are with ours. Are they closer to the threat of any kind of conflagration between Iran and the U.S.? You betcha. Would we see peace activists in the streets of Israel? I would imagine so. This is a story that clearly we're going to continue in the next hour. I'm worried about Iran, people. Tell me I'm crazy. But at least let's make this a subject of conversation today. What am I seeing on the front of the news? And you might be amused by this, Chuck. The front page of the Google News and the AOL News and the Yahoo News at this hour is about OJ and a break into a hotel room, I think, in Las Vegas. Is there a distraction strategy going on? Thanks for the call, Jack. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to Air America Radio, The Tom Hartman Show. We'll be back with Amy Goodman in our next hour. Jon Snow, I'm so sorry. 866-303-2270. You can find Jon's work at channel4.com. Just do a search, channel4.com.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio. Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
You are tuned in. Well, that's right. What have you tuned into today? Well, we'll recap in just a bit. I'm Laura Flanders sitting in for Tom Hartman. Tom's in Europe. He'll be back next week. You can call us on 866-303-2270. That is 866-303-AAR0. Hey, do you think David Boehner needs to apologize for saying that troops and treasure and everything that's been wasted in Iraq is just probably going to turn out to be a small price to pay for the achieving of U.S. goals in the region? And will somebody ask him what those goals are while they're about it? Secondly, in listening to Petraeus, in listening to George W. Bush, are you like I having a single word echoing in your ear, namely Iran, Iran, Iran? That's what I'm hearing. That coupled with all of the talk a week ago, CNN interviewing Rudy Giuliani about, his prospects for the presidency. He, too, talking about the need to stand firm against Iran. Rudy Giuliani saying that the Republican Party wants the presidential campaign to turn on the question of terror. It makes sense given the prospects for continuing terror in the world fueled by, among others, Iran. That is backdrop to what happened yesterday morning. Very awkward timing for the Bush administration. Maybe yes, maybe no. You had the assassination near his home in Ramadi of the very Sunni sheikh that both Petraeus and George W. Bush have been praising for weeks, Abu Risa. He was photographed with George W. Bush 10 days ago in Ramadi when Bush was there on his midnight visit. He may even have come in especially for the occasion. He's the photo op Sunni cleric who a year ago to the day yesterday founded what he calls the Anbar Awakening Command, a pro-U.S. group, and he was taken out yesterday morning, assassinated along with two of his bodyguards in Ramadi near his home. So much for peace in Anbar. Just to recap, I'm suggesting that this mess provides every possible opportunity for finger-pointing at Iran that could lead to both these two narratives, the one about Iraq, the one about Iran, the one about the potential GOP train wreck coming down the track, the potential to weave them all together. And again, this is conjecture on my part, unlike the person we're going to hear from later in this hour. We on this program are allowed to conjecture somewhat. I'm asking for your feedback. We've talked with Phyllis Bennis. I'm urging you to go and check out Jon Snow's interview with President Ahmadinejad of Iran on the British Channel 4 television news last night. I mean, as I've said, it's a lot bluster. It's a lot of baloney about the Holocaust, the stuff in there about Israel. But the key parts have to do with what he has to say about U.S. and British forces in Iraq. You can find that at www.channel4.com in English translation. But we're talking about where we find ourselves right now, and are we keeping our eye on the right prize right now? Are we keeping our eye on the right ball? It looks like most of the people in the broadcast news would have you be talking about OJ at this hour, but not us. And again, to recap a couple of events happening, one of them that we've heard about that I want you to be conscious of, September 29th in Syracuse, quite possibly the first major demonstration by active duty troops at Fort Drum. Iraq Veterans Against the War and others holding an active duty troop-led rally in Syracuse, September 29th, upstate New York. You can get information about that at neighborsforpeace.org. That's with the number 4, neighborsforpeace.org/September29. We've got another news update on the line. Robert in Washington, D.C. Hi, welcome to the program. Hey, Robert.
Yeah. Good, man. How are you doing?
I'm good. You've got another announcement of a protest?
I just wanted to invite everyone, not just your audience, but everyone in the entire United States of America to come out tomorrow, Washington, D.C., for the anti-war rally. If you just Google September 15th, you can find the information that way, or you can go to answercoalition.org, that's answercoalition.org, or just Google September 15th. And when you go to the webpage, you'll see that there's information transportation centers. Whether you're in California or Colorado or wherever, you can click on that and find out exactly how you can get very low-cost, affordable bus transportation to Washington, D.C. Now, what's important is because we will put an end to this massacre in Iraq, and you can say that you were a part of it.
All right.
This is a life-changing moment for people.
All right, Robert, thank you for the news. That website, again, answercoalition.org. Tomorrow's demonstration, I think, will involve a massive die-in by their estimating maybe as many as 1,000 people hoping to kind of represent the dead Iraqis and U.S. Whose lives continue to be lost in this ridiculous conflict in Iraq. Thank you so much. I appreciate the call. Answercoalition.org tomorrow. And if you don't see the news of that on your news media of choice tomorrow, you might want to give them a call as well. All right, let's take one more call. Scott's on the line in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Scott, and then in just a bit we'll welcome Pacifica's Amy Goodman to our airwaves. Hey, Scott, welcome.
Yeah. You know, I don't understand that why Democrats don't seem to understand that impeachment is imperative at this point to stop this kind of nonsense. You know, you have these politicians who come on these shows, and when people raise that issue, they just get this patronizing type of attitude, is that, you know, well, we can just maintain and go along like nothing is going on. Perfect example of what I will bring up on usually on Fridays is Brunch with Bernie segment. When that's brought up, you know, it's like the standard, you know, we can just go along. Do they not understand that this, the seriousness of this issue?
Yeah, well, good question, Scott, and I think you're right. And yes, for people who are regular listeners to Tom Hartman's show, if you're missing Vermont's Bernie Sanders, he'll be back next week in his regular segment with Tom, but he wanted a week off today.
I mean, they have to understand, how are they going to feel with more blood on their hands? I mean, they already have the blood of the dead Iraqis and the soldiers,
but, you know,
along
so
with the Republicans on their hands.
I think that what we're being encouraged to believe that is that this is some kind of a lame duck period for this administration. As far as I can see, nothing could be further from the truth. One of the callers we had earlier today said, this isn't a lame duck, this is a rabid animal.
Lame duck. Well, if this is lame duck, I would hate to see what qualifies as a rabid animal.
And it's very strange, isn't it, that the Democrats, too, are feeding into this notion of, look, we don't want to go down that road because we've only got 16 months, as if in that only 16 months, this administration doesn't have the power. And by administration, I mean this executive. They believe they can rule without Congress, without the judiciary, but they have the power to, run the occupation, approve and veto laws, appoint whoever they like, issue federal regulations governing, among other things, protest and the right to be heard. This is a very dangerous period, it seems to me. And, you know, people say, well, but we want to focus on the war. If you want to change policy, in beginning impeachment proceedings may be the best way to do it, at least the investigations, because these folks are going to be stopped in their tracks.
And they're talking about the president's approval ratings are low, and they're reveling that. What, look at theirs, or even lower than that. Now, they may not get the White House the next time. They may be, in as much as I can't stand this man, you may be looking at somebody like a Ron Paul who was in there.
You got three, you got two-thirds of the Bush, of the U.S. public right now saying they disapprove of the way this presidency is being conducted. They disapprove of the direction this country is going in. It's a disapproval rating. You're right. But, you know, what we know about this guy is every time his approval ratings go in the toilet, he decides to launch another war. I don't want to laugh about it, but there it is. Scott, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. One more, another Scott in New Jersey. Welcome to the program. Glad to have you.
Hey, I just wanted to ask you for your personal opinion, why we don't hear anybody, whether it's media or Democratic politicians, putting the Iraq war into the frame of, look, we need 400,000 troops to provide security so we can rebuild the country, so we can win the hearts and minds. I mean, that's what it boils down to. We can't win it unless, you know, there's 100,000 troops in there. Why aren't, I feel like if I hear it in that perspective, if more people heard that and understood the whack-a-mole and what's going on over there, we'd be out. So if you could just offer we don't hear it.
We would never have been in is why we don't hear it, Scott. I mean, there's no question. If George W. Bush had come to the American people and said, this war is going to cost $1 trillion, it's going to require 400,000 troops, we may have a price to be paid that, excuse me, David Vayner, it's not small, it's enormous in terms of human life, Iraqi, U.S., and I've got Iran on the mind, and all of those families in this country destroyed, even those who don't have a military in Iraq. You know, if they had come to us with that kind of an agenda, you think you would have got any approval for this war? No question. We were told it was going to pay for itself out of Iraqi oil supplies. We were told it was going to take a minimal number of troops. As it was, the majority of Americans were against it, as was the majority of the world. We mustn't forget that. But you want to know why we didn't get told, and we haven't been talked to seriously about what it would require to actually bring about reconciliation now in Iraq? Well, it's because it can't be done with troops is another part of the picture. Scott, thanks for the call. What we need is not a surge of military. We need a democracy surge. We need a diplomatic surge. We need a surge of those who want to actually bring about reconciliation in Iraq. And that's the one part of this picture that nobody is talking about. So, well, we'll leave it there for the minute. When we come back, Amy Goodman of Pacifica will join us. Latest book, Static, is out in paperback. Her syndicated column is probably available in a newspaper somewhere near you. And if it isn't, maybe you can help it be. And she's right here in the studio. We'll be right back. You're listening to Air America Radio, Tom Hartman's show.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
All right, we're back, and I guess it's right we get into mellow mood, because we've got some serious stuff on the table here. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Tom Hartman here on Air America Radio. Our number is 866-303-2270, and I want to welcome to our microphones someone I'm a big fan of and have had the pleasure of working with at various times in the past, Amy Goodman of Pacifica Radio. She now is the host of Pacifica's Democracy Now! That goes out on television and radio stations all across the country and the world. And she's the author with her brother David of a book that's just gone into paperback, Static, Government Liars, Media Cheerleaders, and the People Who Fight Back. Amy, welcome to the program.
It's great to be with you, Laura.
I don't know what to congratulate you on first, the success of Democracy Now!, the paperback publication of the book, or your new syndicated column.
Well, the column's very interesting because more and more newspapers are picking it up in some of the most conservative places in the country. And I think that that really indicates something important. People are hungry for something else. And the show as well on radio and television Democracy Now! Just gives voice to independent voices in this country and around the world. And I think it's an important lesson to the networks as it grows with audiences larger, say, than MSNBC, that people want to hear, not this small circle of pundits who know so little about so much, explaining the world to us and getting it so wrong, but the people who are on the ground, who know what they're doing, who are the experts not only in their own lives, but the independent reporters who are on the ground in Iraq, people who feel what it is like to be at the target end of the U.S. military, yeah. Not describing it from the armchairs in the very well-protected studios of the networks.
The experts are us is very much the approach of Democracy Now!, and it's the approach that you pursue also in the book, in your columns. I want to end with the, I want to begin with where you end, which is the people who fight back, and get your favorite recent story of people who've been fighting back, because after the bottom of the break hour, I want to really dig into the very illuminating reporting you've been broadcasting this week about Anbar Province and Abu Risa and the situation of the U.S. allies on the ground. Obviously, there's news in that area. This sheikh who has helped to make a turning point, we're told, in the war, was assassinated yesterday. It's deep stuff. We don't have time for it before the break. So before the break, a good news story. The people who fight back that you talk about in your book, you got a favorite story right now?
Well, I mean, the stories go right up until now. I think of young people in particular, you know, the kids who just graduated from high school, who were presidential scholars. They meet with President Bush in the White House, 150 scholars from the 50 states, and they hand him a letter. He wasn't expecting this. They weren't planning to do this when they came, but they got together and they thought, what meaningful thing can we do? And they decided they would make a statement to President Bush. And so they handed him a letter that he put in his pocket. Then he said, well, wait a second. I will read it. And he starts to read it. And it says, please stop torturing people. Please let America be a leader in human rights. And he looks up and said, we don't torture people. And they responded, well, not according to the laws you have signed, not according to, as one of the young women said to him, if that's true, then when you sign the McCain anti-torture law, why did you sign a signing statement that could exempt you as well? Will you unsign that statement? These are the young people of this country who are teaching us something very important. And then they handed another of these written letters that were signed by 50 of the 150 students to the press, and they got word out there. There are so many people who are fighting back all over this country. I don't think it's a fringe minority. I think it's not even silent majority. They're speaking out. They're silenced by the corporate media, and that's who needs to be on the network airwaves all over this country. Because, by the way, those are our airwaves, too. No matter whether they're private corporations that run commercial networks on television or radio, they are a national treasure, and that's what we emphasize so much in Static. They are the public airwaves, and they are something
we must
protect.
And when you say that, it's not in concept, but in law, passed in the 1920s and 30s, confirmed time and time again, public property because a scarce resource, and yet we've given them away for people to use to print money, basically, to run advertising. I'm Laura Flanders with Amy Goodman. We're talking about Static, her new book out in paperback. When we come back, we'll hear about the reporting her program Democracy Now! Has been doing on Anbar Province. Very important. Stay tuned.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at
866-303-2270. The most significant development in the past 6 months, likely, has been the increasing emergence of tribes and local citizens rejecting al-Qaeda and other extremists. The success in Anbar is an example of what can happen when local Iraqis decide to oppose al-Qaeda and reject its Taliban-like ideology.
We're back. I'm Laura Flanders. You're listening to Tom Hartman's show on Air America Radio. Tom's away. I'm here for the day. Tom will be back next week. Well, there you have it. There was General Petraeus talking about goings-on in Anbar province earlier this week in his testimony to Congress. Just as Petraeus did, so did George W. Bush last night, singled out progress in Anbar for praise. Saying that they are proud, the administration is proud and happy that some former Sunni insurgents have switched sides and are now fighting al-Qaeda in Iraq. That's how they put it. One of the people that they have been talking about and that George W. Bush was photographed with, one of those who has helped to turn the tide in the war in Iraq, as General Petraeus said, is one Sheikh Abdul Sattar Abu Risha, a former Sunni fighter who have become a pro-U.S. commander, commanding something he called Anbar Awakening in Anbar province. Well, 10 days ago, Abu Risha met with President Bush and held a photo op with him in Ramadi during the president's visit to Anbar province. Yesterday morning, just hours before President Bush was to speak, Abu Risha was killed in an attack near his home in Ramadi, a bombing that claimed his life and the life of two of his bodyguards. Here's what George W. Bush had to say about the death of Abu Risha. I think we have it coming up any minute. He obviously had to add it to his speech, although it is in the transcript that you can find at the White House. Here's George W. Bush.
Earlier today, one of the brave tribal sheikhs who helped lead the revolt against al-Qaeda was murdered. In response, a fellow Sunni leader declared, "We are determined to strike back and continue our work. And as they do, they can count on the continued support of the United States."
The U.S. has funded the Sunni side of this. The U.S. has funded the Shiite side of this. There are thousands of weapons missing. Who knows how much more money been spent on arms that could have gone to reconstruction. You've got a situation in Iraq right now where basically most reporters, barely any reporters, are in the region in question, the region of Anbar province. So all the information we're getting about what's happening there for the most part, most of us, is coming directly from administration embeds or administration sources themselves. My concern raised on this program today is this is exactly the kind of situation. Think Panama. Think Haiti. Think wherever you like. This is exactly the kind of situation that could easily become a pretext for war on Iran, because all the United States has to say is it was Iranian Shiite operatives who took out their Sunni poster child, Abu Risha. Maybe I'm crazy, maybe I'm wrong, but that's what I'm worried about today. And one of the things that's been informing my thoughts about this situation in Anbar is the reporting of the guest we have in studio, Amy Goodman. She's the host of the program Democracy Now!, heard on radio, seen on television across the country. She's the author of a syndicated column, and this week her program has twice covered the situation in Anbar with scoops, with reporting by independent producer Rick Rowley and his colleagues with Big Noise Films. They were in Anbar recently. They talked with Abu Risha. The picture they paint is quite complicated and I think very interesting. Amy.
That's right. I mean, Rick Rowley is a really important independent journalist who went with Dave Enders, another independent journalist, unembedded to Iraq just recently. And that is very, very rare for Western journalists. Extremely dangerous situation. They went for 6 weeks and they were one of the last to interview Abu Risha. Now, he was interviewed not in Anbar province. They were looking for him, trying to set up the interviews while they were in Amman, but they soon learned he was in the top floor of the Marriott Hotel. So they went over and talked to him, a tribal leader in the Ramadi area, who, as he himself said, set up Iraq Awakening, and this is who President Bush was hailing and met with. They call him the kind of Lawrence of Arabia. That was a quote of American captain figure who was leading an uprising of Sunni tribes that was going to kick out al-Qaeda, a close ally of Americans. And interestingly, ironically, sadly, what he told Rick Rowley and Dave Enders is that Ramadi is 100% safe, you know, thanks to them. So he returns. As Rick said, it's not clear if he simply returned to shake hands with George W. Bush, and then he is blown up. And it is absolutely critical to point out, as Petraeus talks about this relationship with the Sunni tribes in Anbar, as they talk about, and Rick Rowley talked about, the paying off of these tribes, and, well, even the U.S. military has said the arming of them. I mean, 2 years ago, Petraeus was doing it with the Shias, and now it's with the Sunnis. And so they're paying for their arming both sides. And as, well, testament is the assassination of Abu Risha, it is not safe.
One of the things that stood out in my mind, and it was a detail that I heard in the Rick Rowley report on Tuesday that I went back and listened to again this morning. In Anbar, he's talking to people, and people on the ground are very afraid of the Mehdi army of Cleric Muqtada al-Sadr, a Shiite militia. And yet he says this part of the country has been almost entirely rid of Shiites. And in fact, he finds Shiite refugees in the outskirts of Baghdad.
Right, the only Western journalist to go into this refugee camp filled with the Shia who have been driven out by the Sunni that the U.S. military is supporting. I mean, you see the U.S. military giving out cash.
And the safety they're talking about is in Anbar is safety for U.S. military. It's not safety for Shiites. Anyway, Rick asks people about this fear of the Mehdi army. And I want to play that clip. Chris, can we hook that up? Rick Rowley with Dave Enders reporting for Al Jazeera broadcast, I think the only place in the United States, on Democracy Now.
Across the country, the U.S. strategy is contributing to sectarian tensions. The fighters in Taji talked as much about the Mehdi army, Cleric Muqtada al-Sadr's Shiite militia, as they did about the Al-Qaeda enemy the Americans have enlisted them to fight.
The Mehdi army has no mercy at all. They're not Muslims. They're all Iranian.
Now, that is a clip I want us to just think about for a minute, Amy, because it seems to me you've got a lot of people there who are saying we need these weapons to protect ourselves against this Shiite army. Rick's saying, but there are no Shiites here. The people are saying, the Mehdi army, they're not Muslims, they're Iranian. How many times is it going to require to have somebody like that speaking on CNN or ABC or NBC before people in this country get the impression that maybe there are Iranians there? Maybe Iranians took out Abu Risha.
I mean, it is absolutely critical what you're identifying, Laura, is this drumbeat for war now with Iran. And it is frightening, and anything will be used to shore it up. Today we had Michael Clare on Democracy Now, who wrote Blood and Oil, and the Massachusetts professor, who is deep military scholar, says there's this push. Of course, Seymour Hersh, with his crusading reports, has been saying it for about a year.
Condoleezza Rice talked about it this week.
Cheney is pushing extremely hard for it. What's more astounding than the government officials, because you expect it of them, that now it's hard to believe they would use this to divert attention from Iraq, when, in fact, actually, in Iraq, there are more Saudi fighters than there are Iranian fighters.
Well, it may not be to distract attention from Iraq so much as to distract attention from the disastrous policies of the GOP and this Bush administration and their prospects for election 2008.
That's true. What's most horrifying is that the U.S. media is doing exactly the same thing as they did in the lead up to the Iraq invasion.
Now, how can you say that, Amy? Because they are not talking about, they are not, you know, trying to distract with discussion of Iran. They're talking about O.J. Simpson.
All I will say is that people like Michael Gordon, you know, let's not forget, while Judith Miller may have left the New York Times and gone over to the conservative Manhattan Institute, her co-author was Michael Gordon. Michael Gordon, who now writes front page pieces on Iran getting weapons of mass destruction. And I questioned him about, even in his previous book where he talked about the war being a fiasco, why he didn't talk about what he had done, the role he had played. You had the New York Times not naming names, but doing a box on page 810 that talked about their problems with their own reporting, not naming their reporters' names. And now they're simply repeating it over and over, building up this, well, people are rightly afraid when they hear that a country could possibly attack us.
Take a quick call. Has been waiting for forever. Elizabeth from L.A. on the question of Iran. Elizabeth, welcome to the program. Glad to have you.
Thank you, Lauren. I'll try and hurry if you can just give me a couple minutes. Okay, you have to go back to Kuwait. I know it sounds ridiculous, but with Bush 1. I'll try to make it short. They went into Kuwait on pretext. I mean, the babies from the incubator. Then they found out that that princess gave a false, you know.
Yeah, the person who was giving testimony about the incubators was working for the
Exactly. Anyhow,
embassy.
They didn't go into Iraq then. I wonder why. Well, Schwarzkopf said, absolutely not. I won't go. So that was the premise from the very beginning. Then you go down. They went through Kuwait pretty easy. Then you go down. They wouldn't go into Iraq.
Well, they wouldn't go into Baghdad.
Baghdad, yeah. Well, Iraq. Or anyhow. Okay, mind you, our troops were in Saudi. This has everything to do with the Bush family and Saudi family. Okay, they let our troops stay in Saudi Arabia. Okay, now you go down to Iraq. It's going to be a cakewalk. Oh, and we have to go in there. We have to, you know, because of 9/11 and all the baloney when it had nothing to do with 9/11. So we're told that it's a cakewalk, which they thought it would be. Lo and behold, it wasn't. So what they wanted, I'm trying to say it quickly because I know I don't have much time. What they want, the end result of all of this, is to do in Iran, and the Saudi royal family and the Bush family are hand in hand, and they will be in total control of the oil. And the reason I say this, my son went to Desert Storm. They let oil wells burn themselves out in Kuwait.
That's right.
Okay, they said, well, we can't put them out. They have top-notch oil well fighters in Texas. They put them out every day. Okay, there was a blunder there. And how Bush said, I don't ask my dad. I talk to a higher source. No, this was all in the making because Schwarzkopf wouldn't agree to go into Iraq.
All right, Elizabeth, thank you. Let me hold you right there. We've got to take a quick break. We'll be back. When we come back, we'll pick up with Amy Goodman, try to tie some of these strings together, and we'll be out of time. I'm Laura Flanders, sitting in for Tom Hartman. You're listening to Air America Radio.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.